Unpolished Little Gems, Episode 16, Christmas Spirit. Amanda struggles to find good festive cheer at the bottom of a bottle, or two, or three, or four. The 12 Steps of Christmas stars Danielle Gearing as Amanda and was written and produced by Tasman Pinder.
Hi, my name's Amanda, and I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober for 3 days. This is a tough time of year because I think about what happened before and I get stressed out. And that's when things go wrong. That's when I get into bad patterns. It's been hard lately. I was doing okay, but then last Sunday, my boyfriend said he didn't want to be with me anymore. He didn't want the commitment. He said he doesn't want to be with anyone right now. And that was as if everything I felt so certain and secure about had been shaken up. It was like I was stuck in the middle of a snow globe with everything whizzing past. Like I was a contestant on the Crystal Maze, scrambling frantically around, trying to grab the golden tickets, but they were all slipping out of my grasp. And I knew I shouldn't have done it. But it ended up being a messy night. Because I just couldn't be in that house. I'd been crying the whole day, sitting around watching the telly, feeling sorry for myself, and I knew I really needed to get out of that place. It was a few days before Christmas and we'd said we'd meet up, celebrate together, like old times. So we all went, 12 of us, and we sat in this field, and Ollie and the others, they were smoking and playing bongo drums. And we sat in a circle around the fire, and they were all, apart from me, passing this bong around. And it was really chilled. And I remember feeling a little better. Peaceful. Then Shazza gets out a bottle of pink gin, and she starts mixing it with some slimline tonic. And her Spanish boyfriend, Pedro, was offering me his beer. Until she grabbed his arm and she told him, you know, about my issues with alcohol. So people got increasingly pissed. They started jumping around, laughing and dancing. And I danced a bit too. But it sucks when you're the only one who's sober. And I just couldn't stop thinking about him. Jamie. Jamie at home. Jamie working, or where even was he tonight? Was he with someone else? I couldn't stop thinking. Why didn't he love me? Why am I always the one alone, picking up the pieces? What was wrong with me? Eventually, I got stuck in a conversation about IT support with this balding guy who kept offering me mini packets of sun-made raisins. I couldn't get away from him. And to make matters worse, I noticed as he was talking that he kept his mouth open while he was chewing. It was truly disgusting. I think that's what tipped me over the edge. The thought that I might end up with someone like him. Or maybe nobody at all. Luckily, Lottie had this brilliant idea that us girls should go skinny dipping in the river. So we walked down the path and we took off our clothes. The water was freezing, but it was beautiful. Being out there, swimming under the silver moonlight. I got out before the others. pulled my clothes on, went over to Amanda's bag. I knew that Shazza was her secret Santa, and she'd given her a Grey Goose vodka taster set, and that if I was quick enough, I could just go for it. So, I sat on the riverbank, watching them swim, and I drank. Pear, orange, lemon, vanilla, melon, black cherry, I had them all. It was divine. Then I realised I'd forgotten to put my jewellery back on, and my shoes. So I went over to my trainers, and my earrings were inside them, and my two rings. But the one from Jamie, the gold one, I always told people was an engagement ring, but really he'd said it was a commitment to be committed to each other ring. It had... well, where was it? I looked everywhere, all over the riverbank. Somebody's taken it. I looked everywhere. And I felt sick. And I vomited. I ran back and I heard them. Shazza, Lottie, Kay, Scarlett, they were all calling after me. But I kept on running, faster and faster, and it was raining. And the rain mixed in my tears, running down my face. I tasted it. The salty wetness. When I got to the main road, I bumped into three French girls. Sweet girls. They'd somehow got lost at the crossroads and I helped them find their way back into town. But I couldn't stop thinking about how I'd lost that ring. And about Jamie. On the way back from town, I bought a bottle of vodka from Sainsbury's. I just needed it. I went back to the river and I sat on the bank and I drank. And I fell asleep. It was freezing when I woke up. But I saw something as I was walking home that made me feel connected. Two grey and speckled turtle doves flew out of the bushes and up into a beech tree. They were accompanied by the call of a red-legged partridge, which dashed in a panicky hurry across the road, momentarily blocking my path. The birds felt like a promise that things in my life could be better. They could be normal. And for the first time in quite a long time, I felt something approaching hope.
Carol regales the crowd with the tale about how she and her husband Brian set up their own dream pub, The Star, with Sasha Cooper as Carol and written by Tracy Haywood.
Brian and I met in a pub, actually, in 1992, back when it was all about Britpop and Carling. We met in the Crown on Westbury Road on the estate. He was a lovely bloke. Still is. He offered to help teach me how to play pool, and I told him I didn't need any help, and if he wanted to help, he could pick me up a packet of crisps from the bar. And he did. So much of our lives have been spent in pubs. sharing packets of prawn cocktail crisps and knocking back pints, listening to Britpop and playing pool. Live Forever by Oasis was our tune. We would get drunk and lean into each other and sing our hearts out, believing every word. I always said what I loved about Brian was that he understood that from the very first night, I didn't need help. That was before all that girl power business. I was just tough, hardy. And I think a lot of blokes, they like to see past that and see something else, something softer. Brian didn't. He always loved what's here. Thursdays were always karaoke night at the Crown. We'd stay out as late as we could, which was 11 p.m. in those days. I'd sing to him, and he'd sing to me, and we'd sing to each other. And I would just think, thank God I found you. We never had kids, so we never had that period of staying in, like a lot of people did. Pubs have always been our thing. In 2001, we moved to Bristol for Brian's job in manufacturing, and pubs changed, and we changed too. We were older and wiser and couldn't handle as many pints, but we still liked to have a good time. We still played pool, but we would also have lasagna or fish and chips beforehand. We never stopped chatting. We would generally leave before closing time. We used to dream of owning a pub. We often talked about how we'd run it, what sort of place it would be. There would be a pub dog that all the locals knew. We'd run pub quizzes and open mic nights. It would be a place for the community to come and get together and have a laugh. We talked a lot about Christmas morning, the laughter and the Christmas music, serving everyone their Christmas drinks, us being part of their traditions year after year. Then in 2011, Brian was made redundant from his role, and we finally had the chance to actually do it. And so we did. We had always dreamed of moving out to the countryside and getting a country pub. Something with a fireplace, the heart of the community. And eventually, after a year's searching, we found it. Our home. The Star, in a quiet little old village, an old converted coach house. It had been empty for a number of years, and the neglect made it a bit of a project. But Brian's very practical, and I've got a head for details. So we decided to go for it. An adventure. The day we got the key, we popped open a bottle of champagne and we sat cuddled up together planning what would go where and all that. Thankfully, Brian knew to defer to my taste, as I had some. And so we went about the process of creating our dream pub. The work took many, many months to complete, and our home was turned into a building site. We ended up moving into different rooms of the house, moving our mattress from one room to the other until the flat upstairs was complete. And so was the pub. Our pub. Finally, opening day. We had planned it all perfectly. We wanted to be the heart of the community, so we sourced local ales and ciders on tap. We got local crisps, local cheese for the cheese board. We wanted it to be a celebration of the area. Within a short amount of time, the locals began to complain about the prices. We discounted the bigger brands, and they brought those. We had hoped that we would be able to take on staff to run the bar, but by month three, we still weren't earning enough to pay a wage. So we worked, both of us. All week, every week. We didn't complain. Living the dream doesn't mean you don't have to work hard, does it? And we did. Getting up at 6:30 and going to bed at 1 a.m. We didn't rest. Over the course of 5 years, our overheads went up and up. We tried to cut costs, but we were operating on such lean margins as it was. There wasn't much fat to cut. We didn't take a holiday. I'd always planned to get someone in so we could have a bank holiday off. But then there was always a bill to pay, and it was easier to work it. Brian and I, we weren't ships that passed in the night, but we were planets orbiting around each other. We stopped cuddling and became co-workers slowly over that time, and gradually, without us wanting it, we became enemies. This bitterness crept in through the tiredness. We would have long, heavy silences, punctuated by one of us snapping at the other. Usually me. I hated myself for it. But I found from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to sleep, my heart was constantly pounding and all I wanted to do was to catch a breath, catch a break. When the big superstore moved in, we found our busy nights getting quieter and quieter, and the profits, such as they were getting lower and lower. Sometimes I would see Brian hunched over the till, looking tired and old and afraid, and all I wanted to do was cross the orbit and wrap my old weary arms round his tired shoulders and take in his old familiar smell. But something was stopping me. I'd grown hard and frozen. Back on our wedding night, we stayed up late and drank. And when we went to bed, we stayed up all night holding hands, laying next to each other in the dark, planning our lives together. We swore to one another whatever came our way, we would always hold on to each other tight and never forget how much we loved each other. By 2017, we were barely speaking about anything but the pub, and the only thing we tended to speak about was the debts. He got a job at a local factory to help pay the bills. He wanted part-time, but they only had full-time hours. So from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m, Brian worked at the factory. Then he would come back and help out till closing. I started to resent him even more. During the day, I existed in constant panic, waiting for the next unexpected bill or unplanned expense to come. When Brian tried to talk to me about it all, I would tell him to shut up. And so he did. This place has taken everything from us. We aren't who we used to be. We're bitter, angry, and sad all the time. And I look at the space where my warm and loving husband used to be. I miss... I miss who we used to be. We aren't those people anymore. This place has broken us. We hobbled on for another 2 years, with no sense of why or what we were doing. Then, as we locked up on the 21st of December, Brian placed his hand on mine and said, "Come on, love, let's sit down and have a chat, eh?" John Lennon was singing on the radio about war being over. And I thought, thank God, this was the intervention we needed. Brian will declare his love for me and I'll do the same for him. And we'll swear to make it work somehow. Pub or no pub. His face was hard and cold. He looked at me and said that this was it for him and me. We were no more. We would sell the pub, split the debt, share the sale of the pub, and go our separate ways. I thought about that young man who laughed at me when I battered him away for trying to teach me to play pool. And I said in a quiet voice, "Please, And he shook his head and walked away and said, "Now, love, there's nothing left of us anymore."